You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
What's going on? You're listening to the Film Drunk Frotcast, coming at you not live from a series of frot quarters. I'm Vince Mancini. I am joined, as always, by, you know him, you love him. He is the irregular regular, Mr. Matthew.
I'm just one of those gays. What's up? I'm sorry.
I love it. Were you recording your Balmer B story?
No, I haven't yet. I'm still writing the fucking lyrics to it because it's so long. It's so long, dude.
Yeah,
I forgot how many lyrics that song has.
You know, you can just do like a verse, one verse, and chorus.
No! I have to do full song, or else it doesn't count as a parody song. You think Weird Al Yankovic stopped in the middle of Smells Like Nirvana to be like, okay, that's fine. I'll just riff about my best friend's mom. No, he said, I'm finishing this song. I'm doing the bridge.
You know, I think he might have been better off if he didn't always do the whole song. I don't know.
Damn,
sometimes it's like, yo, we get the idea, dude.
I don't know, man. I don't know. I think his money would say otherwise.
That's true. I'm sure he's a very wealthy man.
I bet he is.
And another wealthy man is joining us.
That's right. Very, very wealthy man.
You know him. Our wealthiest friend.
Yes, our richest friend. You know him from Round Ball Rock, the greatest NBA podcast ever invented. Ladies and gentlemen, Joey Devine is y'all.
I am gonna leave because I do not appreciate Weird Al slander.
Yes, thank you. I know, I don't like it either. He's a good guy. Yeah. I remember.
Love Weird Al. I loved the Weird Al movie. I feel like not enough.
We talked
saw
about it.
It
on this show.
Yeah,
I still have not seen it.
That's great.
I still
have
it's
not
fun.
Seen
it. It's fun and funny.
I've heard it's amazing. I remember I heard a friend of mine, comedian, who I'm not going to say who it was because I feel like I'm going to say something mean, but they said they were watching like a documentary about Weird Al, and Weird Al was talking about how he just he loves comedy because he loves just making people laugh and feel good. Mm-hmm. And this person was like, ew, gross. I hate
how
that.
Dare that's he? Not, he's not even aspiring to be a truth teller. Amazing.
Right. This person was like, that's not why I do it at all.
That and person, Hasan Minhaj.
That person, Hasan Minhaj. Yes.
I do comedy so I can spill anthrax on my baby.
I'm trying to get at emotional truths, and this guy is just going up there, coming up with different lyrics to beat it.
To be fair, I think the comedian was actually
Matt
saying,
Rife.
the comedian was saying that they do comedy to fuck, I think. And I was like, okay, well, sure. that's fair. Joey, how you doing? How's your life been? You know, how's everything and stuff?
Pretty good. You know, I've been playing a lot of video games. That's pretty much it.
Which
Did
one?
You...
I just beat Alan Wake 2. It's so good.
I don't know that one.
Oh, it's so good.
What is it called?
Everyone should play Alan Wake 2.
Alan Wake? Is that the name of a guy?
Yeah, it's the name of a guy.
It's a cool-ass fucking name.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Max Payne. You ever play Max
Payne?
Yeah,
it's by the same company, dude.
Oh, that company knows how to name a guy. Yeah.
It's like a boat-based Max Payne.
Alan Wake and Max Payne. Yeah.
Alan Wake in the game is, he's like a Stephen King-style writer.
Oh,
cool. Okay. He's got writer's block, and he goes, his wife makes him go to the Pacific Northwest to try and get rid of his writer's block. And when he wakes up, the horror, he's in a book that he apparently wrote that's come to life, but he doesn't remember writing it.
Oh,
scary stuff, guys.
This sounds like a lot of fun cutscenes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Isn't there like a movie coming out with that almost exact premise where like there's a...
Yeah, with that...
It's Bryce Dallas Howard, I think, is the writer. And...
Oh, I thought you were talking about the one with Nicolas Cage.
No, that's where he's like a dream meme. Like he keeps showing up in people's dreams.
Mm-hmm. A dream meme.
Dream meme.
Yeah. I felt like I had to explain dream meme, but like clearly you guys too smart for that. Matt, why don't you play that clip I sent you?
Yes. You sent
We talked about this, I think, last week, but we did not have the audio clip, and I feel like
we
needed the audio clip.
So
I really add something.
All right. So what we talked about last week was...
Just play the clip, dude. It'll explain it.
You don't
have to... There was a couch, and Will was bent over on the couch, and Dwayne was standing up, killing him. Murder. Like, murder. It was murder in there.
Okay. What did you do?
Even when I was with the deer and headlights, and I finally said, oh, shit. You looked at my Instagram. Mm-hmm. You see the hundreds of celebrities that I've done business with, you know, done see Dwayne and having anal sex with Will.
God damn. Just killing him. Murdering him.
Yeah. Just the way he described that. I didn't realize, like when we read the transcript about Will Smith allegedly having anal sex with one of his friends, I thought
the
guy was...
white boy voice.
Yeah. I thought he was doing a joke.
He was killing him. He was murdering.
But he was like genuinely concerned. Like he was, it sounded like he had like a little bit of PTSD. Like, you know, like he
well,
was,
yeah, I
he
think
was haunted.
It's interesting because it wasn't just that, you know, he was watching his best friend Will Smith get analyzed, so to speak, by another man. It was that he was doing it vigorously. Just vigorously pounding his butt.
Well, it's also, you know, when you see that, it turns you gay. So he was worried
about
true.
That. That's
why.
True. Yeah.
That's why you have to go, ew!
Yeah. Ew, no, God,
look
no!
Away.
No, God, no! I'm against this, God!
Yeah.
You have to scream that, or else God makes you gay.
Because God forbid two gay men enjoy themselves.
He works in mysterious ways. That's one of them.
Yeah. One of the ways he works is... You have to say, you know, the counter spell. No, God, no. I'm straight.
So,
tits.
I didn't.
Yeah,
like,
it's like Bloody Mary.
Yeah.
I didn't believe the story at first, but now I'm like, is that just how people become Scientologists? Is if you are like a famous actor who's like semi closeted? Like, is that?
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say I still don't believe that story.
You don't believe that story.
I mean, listen.
I guess the fact that he and Jada are allegedly secret Scientologists, that's the only reason that I would believe it. Because
now
the only Scientologists that I can think of are like Tom Cruise, John Travolta. It seems like they're part of them getting into it was like having weird being a closet,
they have
celebrity sort of thing.
Yeah, the Scientologists have compromat on them. Mm-hmm. And
well, I would say it with Will Smith. Do you remember the story when he made Six Degrees of Separation?
Oh yeah,
no.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he kisses a man in it, and Will Smith like refused to do it, so they had to like film it like a punch with a camera trick, where it's like he's far away from the guy and goes like, or whatever. And I even remember as a kid being like, that's gay.
An actor
just kisses a dude. Like a normal person, a normal actor is not worried about people thinking he's gay.
Well,
that was the thing with
West
Tom
Philadelphia,
Cruise.
Born and raised.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
On the playground where I beat most of my gays. What I'm saying is that he was a homophobe. And I think it's possible. I think it's possible he just was so homophobic.
Then don't take the role.
Oh, well, what do you think? He's going to take a role about a gay art thief? Is that the movie?
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Who is somehow related to Kevin Bacon, right?
That's how I think Kevin Bacon's related. Yeah. It's 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon.
Yeah.
Stupid.
I mean, that was the thing with Tom Cruise where I never just assumed he was a gay man, but the one thing that like made me think it was, I think it was like a Rob Lowe story where Tom Cruise kept making like weird jokes about, don't go in there. There's gays in there. sorry.
Don't go in there. There's gays. We don't like that, huh, fellas?
Okay.
I know where it came from. I have the source. Sorry. Go ahead, Joey. Yeah.
No. You go ahead. Because I actually have a different theory about this story. But yeah. Okay. Read the story.
Okay. So this is an AV Club interview with Bronson Pinchot, who I've actually met on the True Romance.
Balki Bartakamus.
Yeah, Balki. He was in True Romance, and I met him at the first True Romance Festival. Anyway,
okay.
He worked with, they're asking Bronson Pinchot about his roles, and he worked He worked with Tom Cruise on Risky Business. That's how you know Joey's a movie head. He's not looking at the screen.
He just knows.
God damn.
It's crazy.
Yeah. And here's the quote. We didn't know it was going to be a big hit. We thought Tom Cruise was the biggest bore on the face of the earth. He had spent some formative time with Sean Penn. We were all very young at the time. Tom was 20, I was 23. Tom had picked up this knack of calling everyone by their character names because that would probably make your performance better. And I don't agree with that. I think that acting is acting, and the rest of the time you should be you. But he called us all by our character names.
I love that. Can I just say God bless?
Yeah,
God bless that. It's like, I think that's weird. I think when camera says action, then I'm guy. And when camera says cut, then I'm not guy. And then I live my life as not guy. And then I do pretend sometimes.
Yeah. He was tense and made
You're not paying me to pretend outside of cut.
See,
I actually think you have to have that attitude if your most famous role is Balki Bartakamus.
I mean, listen,
because you need to make sure people know you're not Balki.
I'm not saying he didn't hold his own career back or maybe his skill back a little bit, but I'm just saying, you know, I get it.
No, I'm not even being hard on him. I'm saying...
You said hard on.
I did. When he's at the grocery store and people are like... Do Balki, he can be like, no, I'm Bronson today. Yes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was tense and made constant unrelated homophobic comments. Like, you want some ice cream in case there are no gay people there?
What?
I mean, his lingo was larded with the most, there was no basis for it. It was like, it's a nice day. I'm glad there are no gay people standing here. Very, very strange. Mm-hmm.
Oh my God. Just the biggest giveaway of all time.
Okay, so my theory on this actually is Tom Cruise is just a weirdo. And I assume that because that movie's like a sexy movie about like men or whatever. I think he was Maybe the set was a little masculine, and he really doesn't know how to act around bros.
I like
and
this.
Was trying to be like,
I like this.
Hey, it's like, hey, look at that woman's boobs.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, he's trying to.
He's an asexual clump of.
She sure has a fecund womb.
Yeah, because there's like a lot of young men and Joe Pantoliano in that movie.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes, he's asexual tofu. He's just
he's definitely not asexual because I have heard a Tom Cruise story.
Oh, okay.
Now, look, this is probably not a true story, Tom.
We should definitely
pick
on like one of the most litigious people.
I'm just saying, I heard a story one time.
Okay, well, I'll say something nice about him after we.
I want to say he's our greatest movie star. I love everything
he
does.
He truly is. One of the greatest actors living today.
Yeah. But I once heard about a young gay man who answered a Craigslist ad that was like, here's what you have to do. And it was like all these very specific rules where he just had to go into a hotel room and a man was tied to the bed ass up.
Zanku
and you
chickens.
Just have to. No. It was like,
okay,
you're not allowed to tell anyone your name. Like there were all these rules. You can't take this man's mask off. And the man was just tied to the bed with his ass in the air, and it was like, you just fuck the ass and leave.
Yeah.
And it was allegedly Tom Cruise.
How did he know?
I'm just saying, that's a story I heard.
Is it because while he was fucking him, he was screaming, show me the money?
Yeah, he was like... He was yelling tech support.
Yeah. so shout out to Tom Cruise. I will say this, there was a CIA agent who was
That rocked.
Almost fired,
he did a good thing.
Tweeting in support of Palestine. She ended up like losing like some higher positions within the company of CIA, but she was not fired specifically because Tom Cruise said, you better not fucking fire her.
Yeah.
And that to me, I was just like,
mensch.
Oh, okay, he's a mensch.
He did a reverse Aaron Sorkin because Aaron Sorkin dropped his own agent.
Yes,
on the other side of the coin, we have, and you know, I am generally against like talking about current events through the lens of what a dumb celebrity thinks about it.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, like the takes around the bombing of Gaza, my God, like there, it's just I can't not delve into all the stupidest things that people said, because like we're getting 10 new Dennis Millers every day.
That's the thing
it really reminds me of is like when 9/11 happened, all of a sudden there were like a bunch of like cool Gen Xers, you know what I mean?
Yes.
We're like, it was like David Mamet now wants to like do genocide, or Dennis Miller wants to do genocide, like against all, like it's so crazy that it's just happening again.
I mean, usually like the pace of it's usually slow, like, oh, Billy Corgan hates trans people now or whatever, or like, oh, Chris Novoselic decided that book bans are good. You know, like you get
It's a slow burn where you're just like seeing celebrities, like there's space between the red pilling.
But now it's like we're on a speed run. So I was just scrolling through Instagram and I saw this one from Eliza Schlesinger. A couple slides. This neoliberal wet dream that supporting Hamas or using the word genocide when it comes to Israel from thousands of miles away with no context makes you look informed or ahead of some social curve is an actual nightmare for those of us who can't just set this down when the high of being a social media crusader wears off. You think hostages are equal to prisoners who assaulted people? You should spend more time exercising critical thinking than reading random Insta accounts designed to brainwash you. You think Jews are white and therefore feel safe in asserting your misinformed opinion.
Oh, fucking,
you stand for the murder of children and innocent people by a terrorist group.
Can I stop you right there with the you think Jews are white thing? All right, first of all, okay.
That's why they think
all Jews aren't white. We do know this. I think we can all agree on this.
We've all seen "Don't Mess with the Zohan."
Yes, there are many. There are Arab Jews. There are Black Jews. There are Asian Jews. There's all sorts of Jews. I am so fucking sick of the most like white looking little fucking like blonde haired, blue eyed nymph fairies who look Nordic as shit talking about being not white. I'm gonna lose my fucking mind.
Well, literally, you know what?
Literally, Joey, you have more of a right to be afraid to go outside for being Jewish than Eliza fucking Schlesinger. Do you know how many Italians should actually be afraid? Mm-hmm. Like, this is America. In America, our racism is stupid. In America, when people are mad at Arabs, Sikhs die.
Yeah, like, yes.
Can we
yes.
stop with this fucking yeah. idea that, like, you know...
If people are mad at Italians, fucking people? Adam Driver might get a brick through his window.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And listen, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying, but I'm so tired of the loudest voices being the most Nordic or corn-fed looking motherfuckers I've ever seen in my life.
Well, counterpoint. Matt, you've never written a joke about World War II.
That's
so
true.
You're
I've
not
never,
a deep yes. thinker.
No, I'm not a deep thinker the way Eliza is. For those who don't understand that reference, she once gave an interview in which she lambasted all of women in comedy for doing period jokes and then said, I am the only woman who has ever done a World War II joke. And everyone just went.
That obscure historical event.
Obscure event.
Nobody in America ever talks about
we
it.
We never talk about World War II. Well, I can't think of a joke there.
I skipped over the second half of the first slide. This is the second slide.
Yes.
And the paper.
Is this
and
the one where she comes out anti Black Lives Matter for no reason?
No,
have
this
you seen
is
that one.
That one was. I have a story about that one, but keep going, Vince.
And the people who got dropped from their agencies for basically supporting violence against Jews, not just sympathy for Palestine. Maybe now you understand the weight of your casual hatred. What? Living in a free country is only good when you want to safely spout coded Jewish hatred, but your agency's freedom to not support you back is where you feel you have been violated? Tell that to innocent Jews being assaulted across the globe. What about their freedom? Guess it doesn't count. Freedom works both ways. You are free to have an opinion, and people are free to not support you. Fuck around and find out.
Oh, yes.
Ooh, brave yes. truth. Brave truth teller.
Yes. Love to be pro blacklist. It is.
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But dude,
you know what? You know what's actually anti-Semitic? Being pro blacklist. Because if you if you know anything about the blacklist,
I know. I know.
That was a way to kick a lot of Jews out of Hollywood.
Literally. And I like that, you know, in this case, you know, they're like, well, no, now it's reverse blacklist. Now we're kicking out all the Arabs. I also love the idea of the, like, the coded Nazi thing, where it's like, you want to do these coded anti-Semitic messages.
Coded anti-Semitic messages, like, I should be free.
Right, like, Palestine should be free. Free to what?
Yeah,
free to kill what? All yeah. the Jews apparently is what yeah. it means. I mentioned her talking about coded because she also wrote this message. Oh, let me see if I can find it.
Well, while you're finding that, I just want to say, as an Irish American, the fact that decolonization as a word now is being claimed to be anti-Semitic is anti. I'm talking about the British, all right?
Yeah,
just
yeah,
let me.
Yeah.
That's don't steal valor.
We were colonized
from
too.
The British.
Yeah. We have always been against the fucking British. Where are you going to go change over to the people?
So
R.I.P. Shane McGowan.
R.I.P. I know he was so young.
My friend said, like, oh, Shane
he
McGowan
looked
had,
so healthy.
Shane McGowan had been living dog years, like 65 yeah. in Shane McGowan years is like 165 in anybody else's years. Like, it's incredible. When they did that documentary about him a few years ago, great documentary, by the way, but I was shocked that he was still alive then, and that was like, I don't know, 5 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sad that he's, you know, gone for multiple reasons. One of them being because he's in my collage of when I'm doing Irish race science. I always post his face because he has Irish eyes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And yeah, it's, listen, I don't know if you guys know about Irish eyes, but it's absolutely a thing.
What does it mean?
Irish people have these eyes that are like kind of like squinty, like Asian-y a little bit.
I do not support that characterization.
No, but it's not all Irish people, but like look at
that's what you thought.
Look at the eyes of Shane McGowan. Look at the eyes of Seth MacFarlane. Look at the eyes of Rob McElhenney. How do you pronounce
McElhenney?
McElhenney. They all have the same eyes.
Hmm. Well,
Irish eyes.
Yeah, all right.
Dylan McDermott has it. Okay. So
I see what you're saying now when I look at those people.
Yeah. I'm doing Irish race science and it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways.
Anyway, I love Shane McGowan.
I love every time a Zionist goes online to talk about all the coded messages of the Palestinian protesters, because then you see what they write. And it's not coded at all. So she wrote this. When you are silent, when you don't support Israel in this, just know what you are quietly approving is a genocide. If they had their way, that girl on campus, Hamas, protesters acting like Jews are a monolith, BLM, all these tolerated groups we are afraid to speak against for fear of not looking woke. Uh-huh. You are wishing me, my kind husband, our families, my little sweet girl, and my unborn baby dead. That's it. So, first of
for
all...
For no reason, just anti-Black Lives Matter.
Anti-Black Lives Matter. saying that basically, yeah, the girl, some girl on campus, she saw a video of, who the fuck knows, Hamas, same, same. And then just talking about all these tolerated groups. So I posted that thing right after, someone shared it with me. And I was like, it's very funny to be pro, like, blacklist and then also have a take like this where – because the people who are mostly being, like, fired from stuff, at least the ones that we know about in public, they're all women and they're all usually brown women. You know, it just kind of like shows where she's at. But then Eliza DM'd me. Yeah, to tell me how unfair I was being. And she wrote, "Hey, dude, I marched with BLM." First of all, great opening. I gotta say, that's one of those like beautiful openings where you're just like, I hope the second part of that sentence is how many of your best friends are black. And I posted endlessly supporting them. What you are carelessly referencing is my response to their post in the immediate wake of October 7th, as you did it without any research. As far as casually checks notes on black and brown celebs, that was a reference to my tweet. I'm literally referring to Susan Sarandon. I want you to know how reckless your post was. And then she, of course, took the post and then and her DM and put it in her like stories. Uh-huh. And then I told her that I was just made aware by another comic of the timeline of when you posted that. I was just made aware by another comic of the timeline of when you posted that insane thing. I now see that you wrote that BLM and other tolerated groups want you and your baby dead out of anger. I deleted the post because I realized sometimes we write reckless things out of anger. Enjoy your tour. And then she was like, "I'm glad you admit you're wrong. Good for you." And then I said, "Please come to the Palestine Solidarity March." And then she has not returned my message. But I did end up deleting the post because I did have another comic yell at me, who was like, she didn't mean it like that. And I was like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Like,
which comic? Yeah, which comic was that, man?
I'm not going to say. Names. That was someone who we then had a long, fruitful conversation, and that comic realized that I was not doing something out of malice and that, and also agreed that that outside of any context, that is an insane thing to write. There is no context in which you can just be like, I was really mad that day and I decided that black people want all my all the Jew babies dead. Like, you're fucking insane. That's a crazy thing to say.
Yeah.
I mean, is it not? Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong.
Yeah. No, but no. The good thing is
you
that
like to get in there and stir things up sometimes. Yeah. And that's
when it
like
comes to
you.
This Jew stuff, you know, I'm just tired of people taking on the mantle of being the representative of all Jews.
Yeah.
And it pisses me the fuck off because it's like, you know, the majority of people are not Jews and they go, I don't know, I guess. Is this okay? Like, that's what I've noticed everyone's feeling around this is like. Damn, I guess it is okay for these people to talk to me like this. I've never realized that it's okay to abuse me. And I'm like, no, it's not. These people are assholes and it's not okay for them to talk to you like that. Yeah. Anyways, Eliza and I are best friends now and I will be
so you're
I will
gonna be
holding
sitting
her
dog. Yeah. Yeah.
James Fritz had the best fucking post where he wrote, you know, Amy Schumer seems to be saying the craziest shit in the comedy community about Israel. And Eliza Schlesinger, hold my dog.
Yeah.
Because Eliza makes the Comedy Store people not only park her car, but hold her dog while she goes on stage. Mm-hmm. She is a notorious piece of shit.
She does write great jokes about World War II. Though.
I mean, listen. Yeah.
What was the joke? Do we have
She's
that?
Our best World War II comedian.
Like, World War II is my favorite sequel. Classic. The problem is that, like, when it comes to this, like, Hollywood stuff around Zionism, is that they're not sending their best because... Like, actors and comedians and stuff, like, we're dumb as fuck. Like, mm-hmm. we're not smart people, and actors are even fucking dumber. Have you guys heard the Juliana Margulies interview?
No.
Oh, my God. But every time you say that name, I sort of brace for what take. She's up there with, like, Deborah Messing when it comes to just, like, consistently terrible takes about everything.
Yeah, the thing is, though, she's like even dumber is the crazy thing. Let me play. I'm just going to play a little bit of it for you so that we can all enjoy just the good wife. You know what? The best wife is what she is. Here we go.
Great the use of pronouns.
It's those kids who are spewing this anti-Semitic hate that have no idea if they stepped foot in an Islamic country. These people who want us to call them they, them, or whatever they want us to call them. Which I have respectfully really made a point of doing. Like, be whoever you want to be.
And yet.
It's those people.
It's those people.
That will be the first people beheaded and their heads played with a soccer ball.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
a soccer ball on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, wait a second.
You know, there was a...
Does she think... Palestine are Mayans or Aztecs?
ISIS. The thing is she's recalling ISIS videos specifically. Maybe uh-huh. there was something like this that happened on October 7th. I don't know. I have not seen anything like that. and I'm someone who has subjected myself to a lot of footage from that attack.
Because you hate Jews,
right? I wanted to see them die. That was the point of the viewing, the Wonder Woman viewing at the Wiesenthal Center. Yeah. It was so that people who really hated Jews could watch it and go, yeah, do it.
I just feel like this is part of a phenomenon of things that people online do now is that mm-hmm. when you are internally wrong about something, you immediately blame it on like, oh, other people are just convinced by all these quote unquote cool people online.
Right. Yes.
To the
yes.
point that they are now doing it with Kissinger, which I think is the funny, like when people are like, oh, and they won't even deny that he was terrible. They'll just be like, you think Henry Kissinger's terrible? Name 7 of his albums.
Yeah.
It's like, and the reason that you can't do it is because he's behind so many different bad things.
No, yes,
that you
exactly.
forget, like it becomes impossible to like catalog them all. Yes. Like I had to go back and read people's obituaries for him because I was like, I don't even remember.
No,
all
I know.
The terrible things.
Gareth Reynolds called him the Forrest Gump of war crimes. Like,
yeah.
He's just around for pretty much everyone in like recent memory from like, you know, the fucking 60s on into the 90s, I believe.
I have a quick recap. This is from Greg Grandin at The Nation, who I think wrote a book about Kissinger also. But this is just like the overview, and then I have a specific one. Let's consider some of Kissinger's achievements during his tenure as Richard Nixon's top foreign policymaker. He 1. Prolonged the Vietnam War for 5 pointless years. 2. Illegally bombed Cambodia and Laos. 3. Goaded
on
Nixon
Christmas.
on Christmas.
Yeah.
Goaded Nixon to wiretap staffers and journalists. 4. Bore responsibility for 3 genocides in Cambodia, East Timor, and Bangladesh. 5. Urged Nixon to go after Daniel Ellsberg for having released the Pentagon Papers, which set off a chain of events that brought down the Nixon White House. 6. Pumped up Pakistan's ISI and encouraged it to use political Islam to destabilize Afghanistan. 7. Began the U.S. arms for petrodollars dependency with Saudi Arabia and pre-revolutionary Iran.
Yeah.
8. Accelerated needless civil wars in Southern Africa that, in the name of supporting white supremacy, left millions dead. 9. Supported coups and death squads throughout Latin America. And that's right. He's just like combining a bunch there. And 10. Ingratiated himself with the first generation neocons such as Dick Cheney and Paul Wolfowitz, who would take American militarism to its calamitous next level. And then it's like, now that he's dead and people are just bringing up like the anecdotal like bad things that he did. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know this one. Like, apparently he had a hand in the Bhopal disaster in India, the one where like the Union Carbide plant just like belched noxious fumes and killed like an entire town.
He was part of that?
India. Yeah. Kissinger Associates, a private consulting
firm. I was just running and I wiped my face on a shirt and then the poison gas came out.
Say what you will about Henry Kissinger, we could all hope to have the historical impact that one really had.
Say what you will about the meteor that killed the dinosaurs, but it really, really was an historical event. Fucking assholes.
Kissinger Associates, a private consulting firm, profited from the fallout of Kissinger's public policies. In 1975, for example, Kissinger, as Secretary of State, helped Union Carbide set up its chemical plant in Bhopal, India, working with the Indian government and helping secure a loan from the Export-Import Bank of the United States to cover a major portion of the plant's construction. Then, after the plant's 1984 chemical leak disaster, Kissinger Associates represented Union Carbide, helping to negotiate in 1989 a $470 million out-of-court settlement for the victims of the spill. The payout was paltry in relation to the scale of the disaster, which caused nearly 4,000 immediate deaths and exposed another 500,000 people to toxic gases. So, yeah, it's like, yeah, you just keep... He's like the war crime that keeps on giving.
Yeah, like the thing is like it's not just the war crimes too. It's the blowback. It's like you can trace so much of like modern destabilization and modern violence to policies that were enacted directly by Kissinger's State Department, you know?
Yeah, he's like the everlasting gobstopper of death.
Is. Yeah. He's the everlasting godstopper.
The next paragraph of that obituary is. A full tally hasn't been done, but a back-of-the-envelope count would attribute 3, maybe 4 million deaths to Kissinger's actions, but that number probably undercounts his victims in Southern Africa. Pull but one string from the current tangle of today's multiple foreign policy crises, and odds are it will lead back to something Kissinger did between 68 and 77.
Yes.
Over-reliance on Saudi oil? That's Kissinger. Blowback from the instrumental use of radical Islam to destabilize Soviet allies? Kissinger. Again, Kissinger. Yep. An unstable arms race in the Middle East? Check Kissinger. Sunni-Shia rivalry? Yep, Kissinger. The impasse in Israel-Palestine? Kissinger. Radicalization of Iran? An act of folly was how veteran diplomat George Ball described Kissinger's relationship to the Shah. Mm-hmm. Militarization of the Persian Gulf? Kissinger, Kissinger, Kissinger.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like he is, he's such a bad person that it's like if you do enough crimes, the wall of text gets too big and it's too long didn't read.
I mean, it's like when you try to argue with someone who's so deep into conspiracy theories that they just sort of exhaust you with like the length of all the dumb things that they believe. And you're like, okay, I don't care anymore.
Yeah, but like what's annoying though, I mean, first of all, you know, yesterday and today has been just such a magnificent time on social media because of it's everyone dancing on Kissinger's grave has been, it's a unifying experience. It's just, we haven't had good news
guys,
for so long.
I have bad news. Oh, no. Henry Kissinger was German, so this entire conversation is anti-Semitic.
That's right.
We're not allowed to talk about it.
About Germans. Not that he was Jewish, specifically that he was German. We've really, the ADL really stretching that definition. No, but like, and it's funny because I have seen some counter takes, one of them being like, you've got the people who are just like, you're really going to celebrate death? Uh-huh. And I'm just like, who, if not Kissinger?
Yeah.
<who?"> Yeah. Like, come on. But then
it's
I
like when
seen...
they finally executed Gacy, like the like anti-death penalty people were like, all right, you can have this.
Right.
One.
Yeah. Like okay. I get it. I get it. Yeah. No, but like there's just a lot of there's also been the like, I hope they don't laugh at our deaths when we die, you know? And I'm just like, you're probably good, homie. Like if you haven't killed 3 to 4 million people, I probably won't. I won't even know you died.
Also, Henry Kissinger absolutely was laughing about a bunch of the murders he caused.
Yes, he was a bubbly little freak. Like he enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. But like, so one take that I've also seen, which is like fair enough, is like, you know, people are celebrating. Obviously, it's good. You know, fuck him, he's dead. But it sucks that he. You know, he lived to 100. Like you know, he kind of won by living to 100. And here's my take on that is like, I understand it, but like, I don't know if you guys feel this way, but it, for me, the way the world has been for so long has felt so like impossibly unfair that, like at one point I just was like, it's possible he's immortal.
Yeah.
Like it's possible he's never going to fucking die. So when he finally did die, I was like, okay, maybe there is like, you know.
Time to curse at my baby.
Yeah. time to do swears in front of my baby. But I made that video immediately upon seeing, like, I saw one tweet about Kissinger being dead from like an obscure like news organization, and I started Googling everywhere. I couldn't find anything but this one thing, and I was like, you know what, I think it's real, it's got to be real. Uh-huh. And I made that video because I was like, I really want to be I want this to be the way that people find out. Like I said before, didn't I just say this recently on a podcast, Vince, that all I want is to be the person who told you when someone dies?
Yes, you did. Yeah, like the last one, I think.
Yeah, that's all I want. So that, like, when I die, you'll remember me as the guy who told you when someone died. You know what I mean?
But I mean, that's one that you definitely Like, that's everybody. I mean, I get that, like, maybe it's hack because everybody was rushing to tell their friends that Henry Kissinger
yes,
was dead.
Yes, of course,
but,
of
like,
course.
You know, accept a little hack. Like, embrace it.
Bozo, dude.
Yes, yeah. Rip Bozo. There was one take on that video. I mean, besides the people being like, I can't believe you did swears in front of your daughter, which is like, is that... Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Like, my favorite one, though, was the... There was, like, a psychiatrist defending you swearing in front of a baby in the mentions.
And at one point, like, the person... They were going back and forth. And the person wasn't even... Who was, like, mad at the swearing wasn't even being, like, that hostile. They were just being incredulous as to the idea that swearing in front of a kid could be anything but negative. Yeah. And then at some point, after, like... Source after source, that person who said, you know, actually, it's I'm a psychiatrist or a psychologist, and it's not bad. It actually can be good. Just asked, wait, how old are you? And then the conversation stopped completely because they realized this is probably a child who doesn't like swearing. No, but my favorite was someone who got offended that I kissed my baby on the mouth.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, you don't want to make him gay.
Yeah, well, no, it's a girl, but, you know.
Still, softens her up.
Yeah. Just...
That's true.
Ask Juliana Margulies.
That's right. They, yeah. them, and these black lives, and here I am trying to murder the Palestinians. And where's your support, they, them? That's what she sounds like now, by the way.
Your baby?
No, Juliana Margulies.
She's already posting at a 10th grade level. She's so precocious.
Brian Cook said that he's like, I've hated her ever since she went on like Letterman and said $15 million is actually not a lot after taxes and everyone booed her.
Aw, that will radicalize a person.
Yeah, yeah. But I was like,
it's so sad because I go back to her arc on The Sopranos and I'm like, oh man, she was so hot.
Someone actually told me something about that is very interesting. If you want to know just how dumb Juliana Margulies is, it's that Juliana had to play a character named Juliana on the Sopranos because she kept forgetting the fake name and she needed it to be her same name. Hey Vince.
Hey Matt.
As you know, Vince, I love old internet memes. Remember the early internet's obsession with Chuck Norris jokes?
I do remember that.
Here's one. When Chuck Norris went to college, he told his father, "Now you're the man of the house."
Why do you bring this up?
Well, I was thinking about those old memes, and I started thinking, I wonder what Chuck Norris is doing right now. What has he been up to?
You know, I actually know the answer to that, Matt. Yeah, I recently saw a health video he made, and I was surprised. He's in his 80s. And he still seems to have energy and health.
You know, I saw the very same video, Vince, and in it he says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition.
That's almost too powerful to contemplate, but yes. It's true. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change, and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger and has energy all day.
I am way younger than them, and I have energy for about 2 hours a day. And the problem is, you know, that many of us do not include fruits and vegetables and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product.
I love special videos, and you can watch it too by going to mymorningkick.com/podyourself, and it may change your approach to your own health.
Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/podyourself, mymorningkick.com/podyourself. Go there now and watch this very special Chuck Norris video.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime.
Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Have you guys watched The Morning Show, which Juliana Margulies is on?
You keep telling me, and I
watched
need,
the first
I need
season.
Insane.
I
it is
the first
insane. This third season, Matt.
Is it good?
And Vince. No, but it's it's great, you know?
Yeah.
In the first episode, Reese Witherspoon goes to space in this new episode.
Space. Wither space, hell yeah,
dude. She's
well,
they
you know
flash
what they
back
did.
To her at January 6th.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Well, they did. They have a character who's sort of like a pseudo Elon Musk,
yeah, he's
which
played by John Hamm.
I don't think they've ever done that in fiction before. Like,
no one has ever had that. Wow, yeah.
Anyway, it's great, dude. I mean, it's horrible, but it's like my favorite hate watch. It is up there with The Newsroom.
I mean,
The Newsroom is the pinnacle.
Yes, that's the
like I think The Newsroom is my favorite TV show ever.
Yes, it is. It is the height of liberal smuggery.
I loved it so much. It's so bad.
Not addressing the fact that yes, hindsight is 2020. We know. You don't get to recall the playbook just because you're in the future now, you fucking dickheads.
But yeah,
the whole premise of the show is like, remember when I was right 18 months ago? And you're like, yeah, okay.
I mean, The Morning Show has that factor too, where doing so. It's like it's Newsroom methadone. That's how I describe The Morning Show.
I hope they make more Newsroom.
Yeah. Joey, have you attempted to watch The Golden Bachelor at all?
No. I don't. The only reality show I do is Top Chef, man.
Yeah. I tried to watch it for a little bit because I do watch reality shows, usually not network ones. But then I saw the promos for this and I was like, all right, I like the idea of an old guy and like a bunch of 60 and 7 year old women being bitchy to each other.
Sure.
But like network TV is so dumbed down that you can't even enjoy that aspect of it. Mm. So I started trying to watch it, and it was just so relentlessly on message, and the message was that like it's inspirational for old people to date.
To fuck.
It was like, and it just like every scene kept hammering it, and I was like, all right, I'm over this. And then this week and I love that this got an expose, but the Hollywood Reporter did an expose on the Golden Bachelor talking to women that he's dated, that he said like he said stuff like, oh, I mean, I haven't dated in 45 years on the show, and like he has.
Of course he has.
Yeah, and like yeah.
But honestly, you know what? Maybe they didn't define it as dating. Maybe he's the oldest fuckboy in the world, you know? Maybe he was like, we were just hanging out.
And it's just
We were just kicking it.
The lies they caught him in were hilarious to me. Recently, Turner appeared on Justin Long's Life is Short podcast and told the host...
I'm sorry. Can I just stop you right there?
Go ahead. Yep,
stop having podcast people who already have careers.
Yeah.
Stop.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I had to send my fingerprints to the FBI, and there were numerous background tests. There was a psychological evaluation that was like 360 questions, and then another
to go on the Golden Bachelor?
Okay. But despite
this vetting, sure you're horny. They can't just knock on your dick, you know.
Hey, do that dick work?
Do that dick work. No.
But despite this vetting, The Hollywood Reporter has discovered several inconsistencies regarding both his work history and recent romantic entanglements that contradict the narrative.
Oh, God. He was lying?
He's identified in chyrons throughout the show as a retired restaurateur, which is a fancy way of saying he owns or owned a restaurant. But according to his profile on LinkedIn, Gary last owned a restaurant in 1985 when he sold his Mr. Quick hamburger franchise in Iowa.
Okay, that still counts.
Sure, sure.
But what's he been doing since 1985?
Retired.
Mm-hmm. After
he retired at like, how old is he, 60?
He's 60-something. After
he retired at 30, just like all of us.
He held various sales and management positions in the meat business, again per his LinkedIn resume, which does not list an end date for his employment. That does not match up with the idea pushed on the show that he retired at the young age of 55.
Yeah, no, that math for sure doesn't work.
Never mentioned are his years of post-retirement work, like installing hot tubs at Gannon Pools. He then worked as a maintenance man at the Vera French Mental Health Center, also in the Davenport area.
Yeah.
As verified by his colleagues who spoke highly of him.
Well,
that's how the Mountain Goats started writing all those songs.
All right, Joe, you gotta go, right?
Yeah, I gotta go, guys. Sorry, my dog has school.
My dog! I gotta take my dog to
class.
Which
is not even a joke. I love you guys.
Love you
Wait,
too.
Matt and Vince, what movie are you gonna talk about now that I'm gone?
The Holdovers.
The Holdovers.
Oh, yeah. I wanna see it. All right, bye guys.
Bye.
Love you. Listen to Round Ball Rock, Round Rock Pod, Patreon, the Dad Joey Devine. Bye.
Bye. My fucking throat.
I realized after I made you watch The Holdovers that maybe I should have made you watch Saltburn, because that one's much more divisive. But
okay.
The Holdovers, I don't know.
Let's talk about it. The Holdovers.
Let's talk about it.
It's a movie that we both watched, which is a rare thing for us.
It is.
These days, you know, it's hard for us to watch movies because they're not all streaming, you know, screeners no more.
Well,
it's,
also, your daughter is probably too young.
My daughter.
Like that she'll watch. You can still watch things that you want around her, whereas my son is two now, which means that like 90% of any of my movie or TV viewing is watching whatever Pixar movie he wants to watch for the 700th time.
Yeah.
And I have to squeeze all my like adult things in the window between like 8:30 and 10:30.
Yeah. It's a big bummer.
It's
very
become,
hard.
It's become difficult. But we both watched The Holdovers.
We did. So this is a movie. It's an Alexander Payne movie, which I was excited to hear.
Are you an Alexander Payne guy? Because I'm like an apologist for Alexander Payne.
I think I am. He did Sideways, right?
He did Sideways.
What else did he do?
Election. He did About Schmidt. He did Downsizing.
Okay. I didn't see About Schmidt or Downsizing, but Election, Sideways, and now
Election,
this movie.
Got to be one of the best comedies ever made, I would say.
It's very good. It's very, very good. I think Sideways is one of those movies. It's like one of those, like, the Oscars sometimes picks, like, random shit to get excited about. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, why?
Right.
But they were right about Sideways.
Right. It's like you
really
were kind
good.
Of an, I, like, I remember being kind of annoyed by like the amount of hype for Sideways.
Yes.
But when
yes.
you actually watch the movie, like it's fantastic.
It's great. It's great. And this movie is no different. This movie, you know what I like about this movie? It's like if Wes Anderson made good movies.
My first take, and I'm like an Anderson defender to some extent.
Him.
I don't love him. I understand
no,
why people
boyfriend.
Hate him. Yeah, that's true.
You want to glug, glug, glug.
But I 100% agree with you where it's like, okay, if you took a Wes Anderson movie and removed all of the obnoxious smuggery from
right,
it.
Right, and you just decided to like tastefully do a big zoom out. Tastefully do some symmetrical shots, like just
or just tastefully
do a thing, not all the time.
Like depict a boys' boarding school and all the attendant academic jargon, but in a way that it didn't feel like you were jacking off to all.
Yes,
of the
exactly. In a way where where you were like, no, it's not enough that they're spoiled little rich kids. I need to make them look twee.
Yeah,
it's like no, just fucking ugh.
But
this but
I feel like
so good.
But I feel like the idea, I could sense that Alexander Payne was enjoying that stuff in the same way as Wes Anderson would, but he just was more less obvious about it, I guess. Like you could tell, like he wanted it to be actually about the characters, where you often don't get that sense from Wes Anderson, where he's doing it solely because
he's mad at his dad.
He loved that production design, and
he loved the production design.
He loves the artifice, and like Alexander Payne is like, I think at a base level, sort of allergic to artifice, almost to a fault.
Right. Yeah, and I think it makes what he did with this movie so much more enjoyable, because you're getting I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen like an earnest Christmas movie that's mm-hmm. doing all of the like Christmassy tropes essentially, but without it in any way feeling like an artificial saccharine like Christmas movie. Yeah. Like it doesn't feel like it's trying to manufacture these feelings,
and if you take a step back from it, like it does feel like a somewhat contrived premise.
100%
starring a character who is essentially Miles from Sideways,
yes,
like aged up and moved back to 1970,
right, like, and just drinks harder booze now.
It's Miles but with whiskey instead of wine, and he also has a wonky eye and a disorder that makes him smell like fish, which is fantastic.
Yes.
Even less likable, even more bitter, even more like sexually and socially inept.
Yeah.
And you know, he's forced into this situation where he has to be the teacher who's there over winter break at this boarding school, stuck with one main student whose parents abandoned him.
Right. Yeah.
Because they wanted to have a honeymoon.
Yeah. So he's going to miss Christmas. He's going to be alone for Christmas with this most hated teacher.
And you know what the movie's going to do. Like, it's going to create like
it's unconventional. Gonna he's going to Grinch it up. He's going to, you know, he's the Grinch at the beginning, and then his heart grows three times, you know, at the end. It was like, you know, it's Grinch.
Yeah. And they even set it up for... Like, do you remember Scent of a Woman?
Yeah.
Where like Al Pacino, he
did what these fellas only dream of. He was actually a bad man.
Yeah. She had a great ass. Different movie, but
But it's setting you up for like Paul Giamatti.
I was an octopus.
Does he say that?
That's.
So I can have 8 hands,
yeah,
to fondle your great ass.
8 phone calls all at once. That's him as Roy Cohn in Angels in America, the miniseries.
I wish I was an octopus.
He's great.
Yeah.
Love Al Pacino. Yes, go on. What are you saying?
Like it's setting, the Holdovers is setting up sort of the same dynamic where, you know, it could have ended with Paul Giamatti giving like a big speech about why this student should not be expelled or whatever, and mm-hmm. just like putting the whole system on trial.
Mm-hmm.
But then it really doesn't. Like it gives Giamatti like one line, and like you know that they're gonna try and give you like this memorable insult or this one like mic drop line, and you don't think it could possibly land as hard as the movie needs it to.
Yeah.
And then it kind of does, and you're like, God damn.
Yeah.
Like he fucking nailed that.
Yes. Yes. It's that to me is the most impressive thing. When something, you know, something's coming and it lives up to the, it's like, did you ever, hear that, read that story from, I think it was some subreddit where a woman broke up with with her boyfriend because she didn't like the sex mixtape. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't remember that.
And it was just like specifically he had this one song that he liked having sex with, sex to, and it was just like, it's a terrible song. And I told him not to do it, not to play it anymore. And then so he stopped playing it while they were having sex, but then he could, he was still clearly fucking to the rhythm of the song. Mm-hmm. And she just couldn't take it anymore because the song was just so unsexy. And so as you're reading this thing, you're just like, okay, obviously this is all leading up to what the song is going to be.
Yeah, it's going to be like Mambo Number 5.
Right, exactly. And so you kind of are like bracing yourself for like something. Yeah, whatever it's going to be is going to be kind of funny, but you know what's coming, so it's not that funny. And then this was the song. I have it right here. Here it is.
How long does it go? Oh, there it is.
This is the song you like to have sex to. So anyways, it's for me, when I first read that story and then I heard that song, it was so funny, and I was like shocked at that.
Yeah,
the actual song is funnier than anything I could have possibly put in there.
Right.
That's how I felt about that line at the end.
Yeah, to me it felt like, you know, to put it in a sports metaphor, it's like if you're playing a football team and they're running, you know exactly what play they're running. Mm-hmm. And you just can't stop it. It's kind of like that. Like, you know exactly what this movie's gonna do, and kind of where it's gonna go, and it does it, and you're like, God, I'm powerless to not get the exact kind of catharsis that it wants me to have out of it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the musical choices.
Like, yes.
Half of those musical choices, I'm like, this is like the exact song, like some sort of Simon and Garfunkel, like
I know,
60s jangle.
I know.
Jangle folk that I would expect in a Wes Anderson movie. And I'm just like, God, this is like the perfect mood music, though.
I know. And especially with that, like with the, you know, the snow and like just that entire thing. You know, we're both like California boys, so we don't have those kinds of winters. And so I've only known those types of winters from TV. And every time I've like experienced them, that's the kind of music that plays in my head. And I know living in that kind of, you know, environment, you know, everyone hates it, who actually has to deal with that shit. But like, I don't know, there was just something so magical about it. Mm-hmm. I was just like, fuck, I've not felt like this non-cynical about this kind of like background and premise. I mean, the fucking mm-hmm. boys prep school, like, fucking kill me. When you told me it was this movie, I was just like, oh God, boys prep. Like, I don't, how many fucking movies about a boys prep school do I have to see? And like this one, I was just like, this is just good. It's just fucking good. Every scene is perfect. Every, every conflict doesn't feel forced, and like, and it doesn't feel hackneyed, even though I guess it technically is.
I think part of the thing that he does so well is that, like, he thinks through every character. He treats every character, you know, like the hero of their own story, and yet, like, he doesn't give everyone a redemption arc. Like,
no.
There are always characters that are just assholes and are going to stay assholes.
Fine, that's
Alexander
great.
In an Alexander Payne movie. Like, there's the kid. There's a kid in there who somehow looks exactly like both Shailene Woodley and Zac Efron, but is not related to either. It's like a fucking optical trick or something.
Yeah.
But you think he's going to give that kid some sort of redemption arc, but you're like, but it just ends up being like, no, he's a fuckhead who was mean to everyone and no one likes him, and that's just kind of his whole
thing. Yeah, he's just going to be an asshole forever, and you just go, okay, good, fine.
Yeah, like, it's like Thomas Hayden Church in Sideways to some extent, where it's like, he didn't learn anything.
Yeah, and, you know, also I have to say that, like, down to the, like, the choice of Paul Giamatti to play this character,
mm-hmm.
which is another thing where I'm just like,
it's so obvious, because
it's
like,
so obvious.
That's the character that Paul Giamatti's best at. I mean, if you want like a guy who's just a bundle of neuroses who, you know, can't bring himself to have normal human interactions and is too cowardly to like experience affection,
Yeah.
Like that. He's the guy. Like
he
that's
the guy.
That's the guy. And then he does it again in this, and you're like, God, I just want to watch him do it more.
But it's impressive because I think I am generally tired of it,
mm-hmm.
but not in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
In this movie, I'm just like, yeah, I love him. He's great. He's so good in this character. I mean, and then, you know, and also you have the, you know, teen kids acting thing, which I feel like Wes Anderson does in a way that people enjoy. And I understand, you know, that people like it and that I'm wrong or whatever. But like in this one, I was actually like, no, I actually kind of liked it. It works because it's mm-hmm. Christmassy, because I'm mm-hmm. like, you know, I don't know. It's just everything about
it. I mean, the whole thing with Christmas is like you don't want to accept like the levels of tradition and the schmaltz and
right.
like the all the like Hallmark feelings that you're supposed to feel. Like you're naturally have a wall up. You're like, you're not going to do this to me.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
And usually those movies don't. Usually I'm like, ugh.
Yeah.
But this is like the perfect cynics Christmas
yeah.
movie.
Yeah. Which is weird because there's nothing cynical about it.
It just gives you the freedom to like feel those feelings and then come completely around on them.
Yeah, I think it's like the best way to describe it is this: it's a good movie.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
and when you do, I don't care what you do, if you do it good, then you can. If it's good enough, it breaks through any of my cynicism, mm-hmm. and this movie happened to do that, and I makes me wonder if this is how people feel during Wes Anderson movies. Like if they enjoy Wes Anderson movies the way
it is the good ones. I mean, like the last few, I don't think they made me feel that way, but like,
okay.
The ones that I enjoy, they do have that quality where like it starts off and even the Holdovers did that in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like, you know, like Rushmore or Royal Tannenbaums in the beginning, I'm like, this is just a little too neat, a little too satisfied with itself, right. a little too artificial. And then by the end, like I realize that I've come around on
right,
it.
That you're in it.
And I am feeling what he wants me to feel and I'm impressed by it. But this yeah. like this does that on like an extra level, I feel like, and better.
Yeah. You just reminded me how much I miss Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
He's so good. But yeah, man, solid B+ movie. It was so good. I mean, I'm just like, I rarely, when you give a movie to me to watch, mm-hmm. I rarely find myself like sucked into it because I'm watching it as homework, you know, unless yeah. it's like in the theater. I can get yeah. sucked in a theater. And usually just the theater experience can trick me into liking a movie that's not that good. Whereas like it's much harder to impress me as like a screener for something I got to talk about the next day. But I was just like, I think I would watch this again. I yeah. haven't felt this good watching a movie since The Two Popes. I love yeah. those popes.
Dos popas.
Dos popas.
Un popa, a due popa.
A due popa.
I mean, like the main kid in the beginning, like his acting was sort of what I expect from
right.
like a teen actor.
Yeah.
But he also, he just like sort of embodies that shitty high school kid uh-huh. so well. Like he's built like a stork. His Adam's apple is like as big as a grapefruit. He's
yeah.
got like a weird crooked smile and like
yeah,
too
he's
much
a,
hair.
He's a Finn DeTrolio. Yeah.
But goddamn. Yeah, he is very Finn DeTrolio. But yeah. I think like as the movie goes on and like all of the moments where he needed to nail the acting, I think he did.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, 100%, 100%, and in ways that are not, I don't know. It's just like he wasn't understated because again, he's a kid.
No. Yeah.
But it didn't take me out of it. It felt like, you know. I felt like I was, you know, just, it's just a movie, man.
Yeah, it's just,
you know,
proper,
it's just,
proper
it's
film.
Proper movie.
Go to
film,
the theater.
Go to the theater, eat popcorn, whatever. Get your dick sucked by the woman who directed it, whatever. Wear a dress.
in 8 milk duds, put 1 milk dud in her pussy. You suck it out a bird. You just suck that milk dud out of her pussy. Mm-hmm. Watch a movie, yeah. You know you're in a theater, right? Oh. You're in a theater and you're going, oh, it's a movie's on, yeah? And then as you watch a movie, it's a film, and then an older woman starts gobbling your knob. And you go, oh, what's going on here? Mm-hmm. I saw a movie.
I don't want to interrupt because I wanted to see how long you'd go on for.
Oh, yeah, man. It was a good movie. It was a movie.
I kind of want you to see Downsizing now because everybody sort of hated that, but
I would see it. I would see it. I mean, I'm down to size.
You're down to size. But oh, we got to talk about Divine Joy Randolph because I feel like
talk about what?
Divine Joy Randolph, the big black lady in this.
Oh, yes.
I mean, like when she was in the Idol and she was actually like pulling off some level of
right. She some was level the lady from the Idol.
Like she was pulling off a level of realism in the Idol, which was like, I mean, there was
that's fun, true.
There was fun actors like Eli Roth and like some of the other
Rachel Sennett. Yeah.
Rachel Sennett. Like Rachel Sennett did a great job too. But yeah. Like they were doing great jobs that were just fun to watch. Whereas she was fun to watch, but and also like pulling off. A level of realism.
Yeah, she was trying. She was like the only, or it's not that the others weren't trying, but I was, I mean, listen, I'm not telling you guys to watch The Idol just for this one actress, but she was good in it. Yes.
They were pulling off like this is a cute, kitschy show, and she was pulling off like you are going to believe some of the dramatic moments
right, yes.
in the show.
Yes.
And like her mixed with Paul Giamatti was like such
incredible.
An amazing combination.
A podcast I would watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Them and just sitting around watching the Newlywed Game and mm-hmm. Explaining how it works yeah. to an old drunk who smells like fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And telling him like about that he smells like fish, but like having it not be like mean somehow.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and also just like, you know, her character is dealing with some trauma and some tragedy has befallen her. I think her son died in Vietnam. Oh, I just broke something in my child's bedroom. In Vietnam. You know, that's like a very sad thing and it's she does a good job of playing that like, internally grieving character who isn't like being like happy on the outside, but isn't like trying to burden you with it.
I feel like there's so many, like, filmmakers love to depict grief in
they
movies.
Love it.
And
cheat
me,
code.
Yeah, it's a cheat code. To me, it's usually boring. Like, they usually don't do it well. And they, like, oh, look, he's so numb from grief.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch someone be numb from grief. Like, that is that's so dull. I don't care.
Yeah.
She plays, like, a grieving character in a way that... I mean, it makes you believe it, and it's not cheesy, and yeah.
Where you're not, you don't feel the need to like feel for her, in this like, I don't know where, because a good portion of the character is basically like, do not go around pitying me. Fuck you for doing that. But mm-hmm. She's not saying that. You know, she's not fucking that. That's not the.
It's not like a transparent defense mechanism.
No, it's not. And yeah, there's. I don't know. It's hard to carry multiple feelings at once in a performance, where you know you. It's like you have to paint everything you say with a shade of sadness, but just a shade. And that's. You know, I used to think acting was just when you pretend to be guy.
Uh-huh. But
I've changed. Mm-hmm. I've changed. Now I think acting is when you pretend to be two guy. But and you have to figure out level of how much guy to be and mix in with other guy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
So like if you when I write script, I think about what if I make one character two guy. Originally I make it with a guy with two head, but then I said no, that's too much to everyone then going to ask why it's second head. So I make two head and one head. Mm. So one guy happy, one guy sad.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to figure out balance of which is more for say word.
Sure.
Which more happy, which more which, sad for which, say yeah. word.
Uh-huh. Which guy?
And sometimes trade. People say happy word with sad tone. And sometimes people say sad word with happy tone.
Mm.
And so I write in script, happy, sad, both same time. And then I make many. Hi. This Max Payne, Alexander Payne brother. I am ghostwrite on Alexander Payne's script, but he does not give me credit. He did give me many. When I wrote this script, I was in bullet time. So Alexander has to shoot bullet at me. So the time slowed down so I can write script faster. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, not seem fast. For me, bullet time.
Yeah, you're in bullet time.
But for him, I write faster, speed of light.
Wow.
Bullet time script, Max Payne. When I wrote sideways, I originally had it so that whole movie was sideways, but no one had long theater screen. You know when you turn your phone sideways? Yeah, yeah. That's how it's going to be like that.
That's why you called it that?
I call it sideways because it's going to be like that. Sideways for a screen.
I always wondered why it was called sideways.
It's because it was going to be sideways screen, but then people said they have to build new theater, and I said, oh, I don't have that money for that. So I said, never mind. Let's not call it sideways, but it was too late. We already made poster. Anyways, this Max Payne cast, someday my brother will be on.
Yeah. Alexander Payne emailed me once. Maybe he'd come on. Who knows?
Oh, dude, that'd be so sick.
Yeah.
What if we just asked him about Max Payne the whole time?
The video game?
Yeah. Did you ever play Max Payne? That was probably pretty cool. Same name.
Yeah. I liked it, but it must have been so much better for you.
Yeah. You think you'd like it, that joke?
Mm-hmm, probably.
I would hope so. You know who would like that joke? Shane Black.
Yeah. Why?
He seems cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Shane Black seems like a cool guy.
Could be.
He's also got a cool name.
Yeah.
I used to get them confused because their names are so fucking cool.
What, Alexander Payne and Shane Black?
Yeah. And who's the guy who does Guardians?
James Gunn.
Yeah, yeah. Gunn.
They do.
They all sound like porn directors to be real, but they're not, which is fine.
Although, weird that they have those names like in real life.
Yeah, like you wonder though, what are their actual names? You know what I mean?
I just looked up Shane Black. Apparently that is his real name.
Crazy.
Yeah.
He's not even black though, right?
No, he's white. He's from Pittsburgh.
Well, there's black people in Pittsburgh.
No, but maybe the people are just... And Alexander Payne's from Nebraska. Maybe people are just like named those kind of things in those places. I don't know.
Where's James Gunn from?
That can't be a real name, right?
I mean, I can't imagine.
You know, it's...
It's real?
James Francis Gunn Jr.
Wow.
He's from Missouri.
Look at this. They're all from... Yeah. You know what? Stop coming here and taking our jobs.
I know. Your names are too cool.
Just be just fuck. This is why people hate Matt Rife, and I've decided. We hate him because his name is too cool, and he's got a cool name and he's hot as fuck. The fact that he's not out here just having sex.
Mm-hmm.
Like whenever I see him on a video, I'm just like, this should be a video of you having sex.
Yeah.
What I've decided is my brand is going to be objectifying him every time.
Yeah.
Like, hey, smile, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Matt, I had a random link in my notes.
Okay, send me the random link, and this will be the last thing that we talk about.
So it's from, like, I feel like you've talked about this before. Like, there's a street in Hebron where the Palestinians had to, like, build a fence above the street because the Israelis just throw garbage on them.
Yes.
What is the deal with that? Like, I
don't
feel like you had referenced it before, but I didn't know the entire story behind it.
No, I don't think I have referenced that before. This is something that I've only read about in passing, but
I thought
you'd
like seen it or something.
No, this is just one in a string of different everyday atrocities that people in the West Bank live with that I've come across. You know, on lists of just like, look at this everyday shit that it takes to be an alive Palestinian in the West Bank.
But you did go on a birthright trip, right?
I did, but they don't take you. The closest into the West Bank they take you is East Jerusalem. They don't take you to. They don't take you to Hebron. That would be right. No. They don't get you near. Anything that would make you be like, is this apartheid?
but you did. So the joke that you told about getting stopped by the whatever their version of airport
security, yeah,
was that was actually a real thing that happened?
That is a true story. Yes, and I've always kind of like brushed past certain parts of that story, that. I, you know, not even looking back at the time, I thought were indicative of what it's like, you know, to be just to how anti-Arab they are in Israel. But I'm sorry. What I mean by they is the cabal. No, the, you know, Israelis. That story, everyone who's listened to this podcast knows that story. I went to Birthright and I was put in a room at the airport because they were checking my bag specifically. Apparently they had found something in my bag, and then they pull out my bag and backpack, and they say, we found writings against Israel in your backpack, writings in Arabic. And they pulled out the notebook, and it was my comedy notebook, and it said Allahu Akbar. And then I was like, no, I'm a comedian, here's a joke. And I wrote a joke, this is a set list, and you know, my joke is, you know, Allahu So Akbar. How Akbar is he? Allahu So Akbar that when he sit around the mosque, he sit around the mosque. I assume you've heard this joke before. So that's a real thing that happened. The craziest thing about that was that he literally said the phrase, we found writings against Israel. And the phrase he found was, God is great, in Arabic, which is just like, it's just one of those things where I was just like, is that against Israel? Don't you guys have a 20% Arab Muslim population?
Yeah. Don't you guys have God that you think is great?
Right. Yeah. Don't you have God is great in like other languages? But no, you know, yeah, that was a real thing that happened, and then they let me on the plane. And
is that what radicalized you?
No, what radicalized me was that my birthright trip when I went there was I was like,
did you not have sex on it? Is that what made you?
I did have sex on it. Oh, I don't want to brag or nothing, but it was with an American, so it doesn't count.
Well, that's what you do, though.
I know, but you nobody want it to be has a soldier.
Sure. One of those
you want them
ladies
to stick a gun to your head like Janice. I'm Janice in this scenario.
Yeah. No, I got
getting
it.
Reamed from behind by a beautiful Israeli blonde. No, but what radicalized me, or one of the many things that radicalized me, there was three particular moments on this trip where I was like, this is propaganda. One was just in general, like when you go to Jerusalem, there's just, I was like, bullshit. There's no way you built an entire country singing camp songs that I sing at Jew camp. Nuh-uh. This is Disneyland. This is fake as shit. There's just like no way. That's not how it works. The second thing was at one point we went to a gas station to like get gas for the bus, and they're like, you know, go and buy some snacks and talk to people, you know, talk to people about you know, what it's
talk
like.
Talk to these completely regular
regular
village
Joes.
People.
And so we go in and we're like buying like candy and sodas and shit, and the guy working at the front counter was you know, taking the money and stuff, and someone goes, so how do you like living in Israel? And he goes, well, I'm a gay Palestinian, and you know, you can't be gay. I love the freedom to be gay here, you know, because you can't be gay in you know, Arab countries. And I was just like, this is not. There's no fucking way.
Yeah,
this is just such an odd. It was so North Korea tourism board that I was like, no fucking way. And then the last thing was. At the big event, at the one of the last things we did was all of the separate birthright trips came together in an arena for like in, like second to last day, I believe. Mm-hmm. And there was just this big event where there were like, you know, fucking, I don't know, probably like 10,000, 15,000 people in an arena, Israeli rappers rapping about inventing the cherry tomato. And then it was Bibi Netanyahu was literally came out and was the headliner. And I was like, if I didn't know this was a propaganda trip before, you know, I know now. And not only that, but I also know how important American Jewry is to this project.
Bibi being one of them.
Well, right. I mean, like, you know, he was born in Israel, but he did live in Philly for
but he like went to high school here, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He went he moved when I think he was a teenager and lived in Philadelphia and went to high school in Philadelphia. Yes, that is true. Mm-hmm. But yeah. No,
I heard the story was like he saw a couple of guys that were up to no good.
Yeah, no, and he saw Will Smith. And he's beat him up, and that's why Will Smith is in fucking Bel Air now. Mm-hmm. No, but it was just like when the prime minister of the country comes out to greet the teens who are on the fuck trip and say welcome home, and tell us to move there and make babies. That's you don't get more propaganda than that. Usually you don't actually have the main guy doing it. It's usually, you know, it was just
someone
wild.
From the tourism board.
Yeah. Yes, right. It comes from the tourism board. It does it like it's usually not so ham fisted as the guy who runs the country is doing it. So, yeah, it was a great trip and I learned a lot.
And you had sex. So
I did.
Happy
I did
ending. Literal or whatever you call that. Not literal, I guess.
I spent the whole time like kind of talking shit and like asking. I mean, it was like I was still soft enough Zionist at the time that, you know, I would go on the trip and have no problem with it. I mean, it was a free trip. What am I going to do? But I did spend a good portion kind of like asking a lot of questions and stuff about Palestine. And I remember the organizer or our leader of the, you know, group who was our tour guide, essentially. You know, I was like, well, that was a lot of fun. And he just looked at me and he said, go home.
Wow. Oh, because you asked too many real questions.
He was done with me at that point. I wasn't even being that much of a dick.
You were like, so the checkpoints that you guys say you don't
yeah,
have.
Yeah. Can we see, you know, those walls? Go home. Anyways, also his last name was Margolis, which is a version of Juliana Margulies' name. I wonder if they're related.
Could be. I feel like that's been a pod.
Oh my God, Joey Devine. Always a divine time on the podcast when we have Mr. Devine himself listening around Ball Rock. Patreon.com/fraudcast, fraudcast@gmail.com for all questions, comments, concerns. What the Google Void number be?
415-275-0030. I just had to make a call from that account so they didn't delete it again. They give me that goddamn notice every month. I don't know what they think people are using Google Voice for. It's not a number that you call people from. It's not the 50s. But anyway, we still have it because I did that.
We've been getting some messages on there.
Yeah, we have.
We should do a mailbag episode. We will. We will. We will. We will. get your questions in soon. And all right, thanks so much for listening. And until next time, good night and a good chains.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of plan investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.